Last week marked the end of the 2016-17 racing season in Australia, and for Arrowfield Stud, it was yet another milestone year. The leading thoroughbred nursery is celebrating its fifth Australian General Sires Premiership in 12 years, courtesy of Snitzel. Not only was he the country's top stallion overall, he also won champion two-year-old sire and champion three-year-old sire. The figurehead of Arrowfield Stud, John Massara, joins us as a special guest on Talking Horses this week. Good morning, John, and congratulations.
Thank you, Joe. Gee, you called me a figurehead. Is that all I am these days? Just a figurehead?
trying to come up with something different.
Yeah, what about founder? Founder of Arrowfield.
Founder and figurehead.
All the young ones call me around here now, the founder.
And what a journey it's been, John. So many success stories, but more recently off the back of Snitzel, who is just continuing to do remarkable things.
Well, he's a little bit scary because he's sort of breaking almost every record. You know, there's nothing, you know, number of two-year-old winners in a season, he set a new record there. Number of stakes winners in a season, well, he equaled Dane Hill's, no less, his record there. And so it goes on. It's amazing what he's doing. And it all goes well because he's got some very good books in terms of numbers and quality of mares coming through, you know, as their embryos at the moment and their yearlings and two-year-olds. So there's plenty to look forward to. I think it'll spill over into the next year or two, the way it's looking at the moment. And a lot of his good two-year-olds, of course, are returning. So I'm looking forward to another exciting year.
Last season on the track, he matched Dane Hill's record of 26 individual Australian stakes winners in one season. He's just having a phenomenal time on the racetrack.
Yeah, tremendous time. And, you know, five Group 1 winners that season, you know, Russian Revolution and Invader with the Sires Produce and Russian Revolution with the Galaxy, Summer Passage with the Sires Produce in New Zealand and Red Zell with the Doomman 10,000. And Heavenly Blue in South Africa, winning the South African Classic at Turfontein. So he's doing it at the highest level. As well as getting stakes winners, he's getting really nice stakes winners to go with it, you know. So it's terrific.
He's right up there now in the record books generally for Arrowfield. Dane Hill, of course, the most famous of them, having won 9 General Sires Premierships and Redoute's Choice 3. But this horse, to do what he's done and will continue to do, is something to behold, John.
Well, it's very gratifying, Joe, because we have followed that line and developed it since the days of Dane Hill in, 1989. We found Dane Hill and brought him to Australia. He went on to do what he did, and then we stood 3 of his sons, Dan Zira, who was a champion two-year-old sire, Flying Spur, who won the General Sires list, was top of the General Sires list 1 year, and Redoute's. And then out of Redoute's, from Redoute's, we bought a couple of his sons, including Snitzel and Not a Single Doubt, and Snitzel, and both of those actually are doing really well, and Snitzel's now the champion sire here. So we've got an unbroken line of 3 males, father to son, champion sires in Australia. So it's terribly exciting, you know. We're thrilled with all that. It's staff's excited. We're all excited.
So he's the fifth resident of Arrowfield to become a champion sire. The other names are Flying Spur and Last Tycoon and Dane Hill and Redoute's Choice, we've already mentioned. Now, going back to the days when he went through the yearling sales ring back in 2004, time flies,
yep,
when Gerald Ryan bought him for $260,000. Yep. He won his first 3 starts, John, as a two-year-old, and retired on 7 wins and $1 million plus in prize money. What was it about this horse, apart from his connection to Arrowfield already with his breeding, but what was it about him on type that really captured your interest?
I'll tell you that, to be truthful, I looked at him as a yearling because I liked his pedigree. He had a good stallion's pedigree, and the involvement of snippets in the family was really important to me. He's out of a snippets mare, etc. All of those things were really attractive to me, but I found he was a little bit small as a yearling, and I was frightened he mightn't grow. So I passed him by, but Gerald was bright enough to buy him for one of his clients. Subsequently, I followed him, obviously, because I was interested in him at the sales, and I followed him, and he had an enormous amount of natural speed. He was a horse endowed with a lot of natural speed, and he grew. He's not a big horse today, but he's certainly big enough, and he throws produce at a normal size. He throws big horses, medium-sized horses. He's not an issue in that regard, but as a yearling, I was a little bit reticent to buy him because of his size, but of course, as he developed then and became such a great athlete, I became very interested in him, and I felt that as a three-year-old, he'd go on to win a Group 1 somehow, somewhere. And I bought into him, and he won the Oakley Plate for us. He speed eagled a very good field in the Oakley Plate on a heavy track, actually, at Caulfield. I remember clearly the day because we had Miss Finland on the same day in the Blue Diamond. So she ran second in that. So he was an attractive package. He was by Redoutes, and I believed even then, as early as that I thought Redoutes would be a sire maker himself. I thought he was the son of Danehill that would end up being the sire maker, and that's proved so far to be correct. And then I thought, well, he's got all the attributes, pedigree, he's got the brilliance. He was a very well-balanced horse. Even at the sale, he was a beautiful, lovely, loose-walking, well-balanced horse. He never lost that as he grew. And as I said, after that time, I decided to make a move and buy into him, and there we are. He's turned out to be, he won his Group 1, and we retired him ultimately, and he over time, he's built into what he is today.
And that size you mentioned enabled him to be precocious on the racetrack. And researching your comments about the horse over the years, it was that precocity that really nailed it for you.
Look, the sons of Redoutes that have that show precocity as two-year-olds have that speed, provided they've got everything else you look for in a sire, they're usually a very good chance of making it. You've only got to look at the others that have made it, you know, and you'll find that they're the ones that really do it as stallions. So that's where we're in. We were trying to find sons that would become stallions, and he fitted the mould. And as you say, if they're big and huge and lanky, they ain't going to be early. So, but this bloke was neat and balanced, and he went like a bullet.
We hear so much about his deeds as a stallion and a racehorse and about his progeny now on the racetrack, but tell us a bit more about the horse on farm, John, and what some of his attributes are, what sort of character he is compared to, say, the likes of Danehill and Redoutes Choice, who have been your famous stallions.
Well, I tell you something about that whole line, and I think it's, you know, the longer I live and the more I learn about horses, I come to realise how important the temperament and the mind is in these horses as racehorses, and ultimately later on as stallions too, but mainly as racehorses. And Danehill was a very layback horse, and nothing would worry him. He'd run through a brick wall if you asked him to. You know, he could take pain, high pain threshold. The same was applied to Redoutes Choice himself. He was a monster that would... that was an extraordinary horse that would respond enormously to vigorous riding, and we saw that in the Caulfield Guineas. And then this bloke is the same. He's a very laid-back horse. They're all got tremendous temperaments, and they don't burn themselves out until the time is right in a race. And they've brought that to stud with them. They're very easy to handle, and our guys here at the farm love dealing with them because they're very easy horses and happy, friendly horses.
And Arrowfield in general, John, quite remarkable, isn't it, the success that you've had over the years? And it's not by accident. You've worked very hard for that success. But to find so many incredibly successful stallions globally, that is an extraordinary record.
Well, we've made that our specialty, and we've worked hard at studying the statistics worldwide, and we dug Danehill up, and he's the beginning of it all. But you know, you need a bit of luck to go with it. You know, you can do everything else right, but you know, you need a bit of luck. For example, in a crop of 100 horses, there might be 3 or 4 outstanding ones in for a good stallion. You know, and if those get injured in some way, or die or have accidents in a paddock and never get to see the light of day, that crop could in fact be wasted because the public will never know how good that stallion was because his better ones never made it. So you just never made it to the track. You need some luck to go along with the science, if you like, and the art. And we've had a bit of luck, happily, with these horses, and we've been able to do the rest.
And thanks to Schnitzel, the sales ring in past years, and more recently this recent yearling sale, has been on fire. So many vendors have reaped great benefits out of sending his progeny through the ring. He's boosted overall figures for the yearling sale season this year alone enormously.
Oh, well, he's sold 111 lots this year, Joe, for $41.7 million. It's amazing. It's an average of $375,000 a horse. So that's on service fees a fraction of what they are today. So people have done brilliantly out of him. So it's lovely that that's happened. He stands for a higher fee today, but I still think it's a pretty reasonable fee given what he can achieve for people. He had two $1.7 million yearlings at Easter, a colt and a filly, both ours, and both sold on behalf of clients of ours. They weren't actually owned by us, but they were sold by us on our clients' behalf, grown at Arrowfield. So that was a very good outcome for those two clients. But a lot of third parties, other clients, other farms have done really well out of him, and happily they've come back and booked into him this year at the higher fee of 160. But his statistics are just looking unbelievable at the moment. He's had 11 individual Group 1 winners, and it's starting to really build. 64 stakes winners. He's really beginning to build. His average, his overall stakes winners to runners lifetime is 8.6, and he's working his way up to the 9 and 10% mark, which is up in the higher echelons worldwide. You know, if you can get 9 or 10%, but Reduce is 12%, by the way, lifetime, I should mention to you. So he's won right out of the box. This boy's got to work himself into that. But at the moment, he'd be running second to Reduce of all the stallions in Australia.
And more to come from him on the racetrack, being the champion sire of two-year-olds for last season and also three-year-olds. So there's a lot of exciting young prospects still coming up.
Oh, loads of them. I mean, you've got Russian Revolution. I don't think we saw the best of him, even though he won a Group 1 race. Invader is coming back as a size produce winner. I know they're continuing to compete. They're going to compete on with Red Zell. You've got there's a flurry of them. Minari, how he's not a stakes winner, I don't know, but he trialled very well this week. And there's a whole bunch of them to return. Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And there's some nice fillies to come back too for him. So yes, he's got those. Then he's got the 2 year olds who are about to hit the scene again out of better mares and good numbers of them. So there's a lot, you know, there's a lot to look forward to with Schnitzel at the moment.
Yeah, there sure is. And how are people going to get into him this season? The mares would be queued up out the front gate, John.
Yeah, well, the trouble is, you know, you'd love to take everyone that comes in because, you know, we make our revenue out of selling nominations, and that's, you know, that's our main source of income. But at the end of the day, you can only go so far without taking a risk, because if he has any sort of a hiccup during the season, etc., you don't want to disappoint people. So you've got to try and act as, you know, be moderate in your actions when you get a horse like this. It's tempting to just keep them rolling in, but you know, I think we've hardly disappointed anybody this year. Anybody that had a mare that sort of justified coming in, or an established client of ours that wanted to get in, we've managed to sneak them in. And if the worst gets the worst, we reduce our own use of the horse. You know, we're sending him 30-odd mares, but we could drop one of ours out and send it to Reduce or something else if it's really important for the mare to come into Schnitzel. So that's how we're handling it. And so far, I don't think we've disappointed too many people, but there is a huge amount of demand. He'll serve close to 200 mares this year.
Nice plan B to have if you need it. I will send him to Reduce. So how are the rest of the stallions on your busy roster faring at the moment, John?
Well, you know, they're all in good shape. We've got some really exciting first-season ones this year and second-season ones. I mean, I don't think we've had such a prolific lineup as we have at the moment. The one I'm very excited about, a horse that really hasn't hit the scene in a big way yet, and that's Animal Kingdom. Kentucky Derby winner also won the World Cup in Dubai. He's had six winners in Australia as 2 year olds, but we have a few of them. We own a few of them, and we have them in training. And the feedback we're getting is very, very positive from our trainers, including Paul. Son Paul, who trains four or five of them, he's got a couple of really nice ones. David Hayes has the one out of Miss Fenland called Earth Angel, who promised in her first couple of starts to be something very good, and she's come back a different physical after the break, and she is going to be a powerhouse this year. And she goes to David the next week or so. She's been pre-trained here at the farm, so. There's a bunch of them. The other day, Animalia won for Dali by, I don't know, 8 or 9 lengths at Wyong. There's a bunch of other ones. We've had a very good trialer this week in Melbourne with Nigel Blackiston. Won a trial very, very easily. Hasn't been seen on the track yet, but will be coming out shortly, called Zephoria. There are so many prospective ones, I'm getting quite worked up that he's going to be a very interesting... He's going to be a classic horse. He's not going to be an early horse, but he'll give people another option, a complete outcross, and an outcross that can get you milers plus. So I'm excited about him. And then you've got Dundeal, who's been very well supported, the champion racehorse, and he's been really well supported, and he's again very well supported this year on the back of his foals and on the back of the feedback from trainers. So they're two exciting ones in the cooker. And then we've got first season sires coming out, which are very, very good too, I think, prospective, and they've been very well received. Maurice, you'd know about him, the Japanese horse that, you know, has won his 6 group ones. We've got a son of Deep Impact, Mickey Isle, who was a champion sprinter miler of Japan last year. And he's an exciting horse and a good-looking horse. And then we've got a very popular horse called Shalar by Invincible Spirit, the sire of I'm Invincible. And he was the champion two-year-old of Europe, owned by Sheikh Joanne. So we're very lucky to have secured him for stud duties here. So we've got an exciting array of horses. We love every one of them. We'll be supporting every one of them very strongly with our own mares. And happily, the market's accepted them and we've priced them, I think, pretty reasonably for people.
And, John, as well as having an amazing array of horses on the roster, your administrative team at Arrowfield is very strong, and that's something you've always prided yourself on, is selecting good people to surround yourself with professionally. Vicky Leonard, in particular, of late, has been quite prominent, and we've been covering off aspects of a blog that she started writing on racing in general, which I found most interesting.
Yeah, Vicky's pushing this view of the need to sell the industry in a different way, and I think she's got a strong point, so I've supported her in that. Arrowfield have undertaken, funded the research, which has led to some of the conclusions she's arrived at, and we're hoping out of the sort of public interest there is in her blog that people will take that seriously and will be able to fund a program to properly defend the industry and expand it in a way different to the way it's been done in the past. I think most of the industry's promotion in years gone by has been in the, I suppose, television, radio and print press. The point is now that the internet is, social media is critical, and there's nobody really defending the industry and its interests and dealing with animal welfare criticisms, etc., in the social media. We have a great story to sell, and Vicky thinks we're not selling it well enough, and I agree with her. So I'm very supportive of what she's doing, and we're hoping this will lead to a bit of a program funded on a national basis.
And John, yourself, you've stepped back from the high-level administrative roles in racing as chairman of Racing New South Wales last year after more than 5 years reigning there. You've left a huge legacy in New South Wales, and we're seeing the state in some areas, dare I say it, overtaking Victoria. It's been an interesting transition.
I thought I'd hear that from you, Joe, but okay, thank you, we'll take that. It's not a race, you know. It's not a race. We want them both to be good.
Well, you know, I'm torn between the two cities, John, so I don't have a bias one way or the other. But, you know, New South Wales have come up with some fantastic initiatives of late, and one of those is the Everest concept, which seems to be catching on here, and it's gained the momentum you'd be hoping it would.
Look, I've just returned from overseas. I went to the July Cup in Newmarket and saw a few racing people, and that's all they wanted to talk about, the Everest. It certainly caught the attention of the world racing public, and it epitomises Australia's speciality in sprint racing. I mean, we need diversity, but the fact is that we produce great sprinters here, as has been proven by our horses that have gone overseas and competed. And this is the most valuable sprint race in the world, $10 million race on grass. And, you know, the best sprinter in the world hopefully will emerge from it. Now, I know that the Racing South Wales Board is working hard to get some international representation there, but every top Australian sprinter will be involved here, because I know they're battling and fighting over slots at the moment. I'm getting calls to try and help people get slots, and there's nothing I can do to help them. But, you know, they think I can, but I really can't. But I know that the level of interest is huge. And I think it's going to be an exciting race. And I've got a horse, an interest in a horse, that I didn't think I would have. So I didn't really buy a slot. I got offered a slot, didn't take it, because I didn't have a sprinter. But I've got Pariah. We own a half interest in Pariah now, and he's the horse that ran second in the Blue Diamond. He's a very sharp son of Redoute's Choice, and he's one that could be going towards that race as well, so I might even have an interest in it, but got to find a slot. I've got a problem of finding a slot as well now. But but look, there is enormous interest. And as I say, I was in Hong Kong and they wanted to talk to me about it. I was in England, they wanted to talk to me about it. It really has caught the imagination of people. And I reckon there's a fair chance we'll get some international representation, if not this year, next year and the next, and the year after that, because it is a very valuable race for sprinters. And I just think they'll come chasing it. And ostensibly, the winner of that race will probably end up being the best sprinter in the world. I think this is the way it's going to build.
Interesting, isn't it? Because many of the naysayers, I guess, when it was first announced, were sceptical as to whether or not it was a realistic aspiration to fill all of those spots for that amount of money. So it's most interesting to hear that you've been overbeared with them.
Yeah, amazing. I think Racing New South Wales could now, I mean, they've set the scene and there won't be any other slots sold, but they could have sold another three or four slots. It's an amazing thing. There's an enormous amount of interest. And the fact that you can trade your slots, etc., adds a lot of interest to the whole race. So there'll be a lot of discussion, a lot of intrigue, and I think it's going to be a very interesting race, really interesting race. And they're turning it into a big day now with some support races and what have you. So it'll give Sydney something of a big spring day before the heavy Victorian spring gets started, you know, Cox Plate and Caulfield Cup and Melbourne Cup Carnival. So but nothing will ever take away from those big Victorian races. They're fantastic, and they're so well-established and world-renowned now. The Melbourne Cup Carnival is beyond, you know, is peerless, really.
John, from a national perspective then, what are your thoughts on how Australian racing is positioned at the moment, coming off some challenging times, and the increased focus on welfare is important at the moment?
Yeah, it's really important. I think every state has taken some initiatives on the welfare front. I noticed New South Wales recently bought a property for retiring and rehoming horses, a big property, So there's a lot going on. Some money's going out of every winning purse into a pool at the moment in New South Wales, building up quickly. There's a real awakening about... look, I think we've been good on welfare. We love our horses. You know, my wife tells me that I look after my horses better than I look after myself. And it's true about most horse people in the thoroughbred industry. But it's a story that doesn't necessarily get sold to the public. It needs to be told, and there need to be examples of what we do and how well these horses are looked after. And we need to have systems in place where we can show where these horses are getting rehomed, etc., and ensure that, you know, nothing falls in between the cracks. All that's happening now, and I think that's a big positive. And I think Vicky Leonard's view is that those stories have got to be told, and they've got to be told very clearly on the social media, in the social media, where currently most of the action is.
And focus on welfare and life after racing is helping to better connect the non-racing public with the horse, which is so important and been lacking in a lot of promotion of racing over many years.
100% right, Joe. And it will win over the sort of 25 to 35 demographic, which is, you know, who are sort of have a strong sense of social justice and animal welfare, and I think if they see how well we are doing, I think we could, you know, attract them back into the business in some way or another.
Well, John, we could talk to you for hours. It's been really lovely to have you on the program, and once again, congratulations on the continued success of Arrowfield and the Stallions and everything you're doing for the sport and have done as a great visionary. We've been very lucky to have your time over the years dedicated to the sport, your own time, which is largely voluntary, to help drive the industry forward.
Joe, I've enjoyed every bit of it. Thank you.
John Massara on Talking Horses.